Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Spanish National Radio, Radio Havana Cuba, and Russia's Sputnik Radio. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The European Union says that the negotiations to complete Brexit, the UK withdrawal from the European Union, are not even halfway done. This week saw the deadliest border clash in 40 years between China and India, following Indian troops crossing the border and attacking. Trump's surprise announcement of troop reductions in Germany was followed by assurances that the U.S. will support NATO nations. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
The European Union's chief executive says the EU and the UK are not even halfway through work on a Brexit deal despite the transition period due to end this December. Ursula von der Leyen, who you see right there, says that a deal would rely on agreements governing fair competition, fisheries, and dispute settling. Britain left the EU last January.
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has warned that his country will respond if it is provoked, following the deadliest border clash with China in decades. India says 20 of its troops were killed in hand-to-hand fighting that took place along the disputed part of the border in the Himalayas. Earlier, there were signs of de-escalation, with China saying the two sides had agreed to resolve the matter through dialogue.
For weeks, trouble has been brewing in one of the remotest border regions in the world. These satellite images show Indian and Chinese troops gathering high in the Himalayas. Now, for the first time in decades, India says 20 soldiers were killed. The two sides fought with fists and rocks. No shots were fired. Among those left bereft, the family of Colonel Santosh Babu, who was killed.
We were shocked.
Since yesterday, we have been in a deep shock on hearing about my son's misfortune. We never expected this, but it is not new for him to be working in such difficult, difficult places. Angry protesters gathered in the city of Ahmedabad, demanding revenge and calling for a boycott of Chinese goods. Let's make India self-reliant and give China a fitting reply. Beijing says it was defending its territorial integrity. Shockingly, on June 15th, Indian troops seriously violated the bilateral consensus and crossed the border line twice, engaging in illegal activities and provoking and attacking Chinese personnel, resulting in serious physical confrontation between border forces on the two sides. This yellow line marks the boundary between these superpowers. Known as the line of actual control, it is not a hard frontier since China and India have never agreed on where it should lie. In 2017, the two sides confronted each other for 73 days after Indian troops blocked Chinese construction of a road. For years, Chinese and Indian leaders have struggled to reach a lasting solution. This latest escalation suggests a difficult path ahead for these two nuclear-armed nations.
The United States remains committed to its NATO allies and will notify the organization of any troop drawdowns in the future. Now, that is the message tonight from Brussels, where a video conference of NATO defense ministers is taking place. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says that the U.S. has stated its commitment to European security at the meeting very strongly. The reassuring tones coming from Brussels follow a surprise announcement of just a few days ago that the U.S. intends to withdraw thousands of its troops stationed here in Germany, although it has given no date when that will happen.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Next, Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Allison Hughes reports on the video conference between the European Union and U.S. Secretary of State Pompeo concerning transatlantic relations, the U.S. withdrawing from the World Health Organization, and the U.S. support versus EU opposition to Israeli annexation of Palestinian territory. Nationwide protests against the government in Lebanon have resumed following the lifting of the COVID restrictions. An update on the situations in Syria, where poverty has gotten much worse. The director of the United Nations World Food Program talks about food shortages becoming catastrophic in many countries. Despite the chaos from the COVID crisis, Israel has launched dozens of bombing raids into Syria, claiming it is for self-protection. Spanish National Radio.
This past Monday, the EU's High Representative for Foreign Affairs, Spaniard Josep Borrell, held a 90-minute video conference with the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. While the point of the conference was identified broadly as transatlantic relations and cooperation, Borrell proposed a separate bilateral dialogue on China and the challenges its actions and ambitions pose for both the U.S. and the European Union. Borrell stressed that while we may not agree on everything, our commitment to transatlantic cooperation is as strong as ever. Nonetheless, the topics raised highlighted the differences. The EU expressed its dismay over President Trump's decision to quit the World Health Organization because, quote, global problems need global solutions. The main topics of the meeting were China, the Middle East, and Ukraine, to which NATO recently awarded special partner status. Borrell and some EU foreign ministers also expressed concern over Turkey's actions in the eastern Mediterranean, including its unauthorized oil drilling off the shores of Cyprus and Greece. Secretary of State Pompeo did not respond on that issue. Regarding the U.S. policy on Israel and Palestine, the EU diplomats reiterated their displeasure over President Trump's one-sided proposal favoring Israel and their firm opposition to any unilateral annexation by Israel of Palestinian territories. Meanwhile, Israeli President Benjamin Netanyahu has pledged to annex unilaterally swaths of the occupied West Bank as of July 1st, in open contravention of international law. The German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas called for a multilateral push to restart peace talks between Israel and Palestine, but Joseph Borrell told the press conference Mr. Pompeo has not accepted, nor has he refused anything. Nationwide protests in Lebanon against the government have resumed following the lifting of COVID-19 restrictions. For the past 4 days, demonstrators from all of Lebanon's varied sectarian groups have taken to the streets in the midst of the country's economic and social collapse. Over the weekend in the northern city of Lebanese Tripoli, 120 people were injured in clashes as riot police fired tear gas and rubber bullets at the crowd. At least one demonstrator lost an eye when hit by a bullet. In the capital, Beirut, businesses and properties were set ablaze and streets were barricaded. Banks, and in particular Lebanon's central bank, were also targeted as the Lebanese pound has seen its value drop against the dollar to record lows, and banks imposed limits on access to funds. Over the past several months since the protests began in Lebanon last October 17th, food prices have risen 70%, and the state has been unable to ensure water and electricity to households daily. With a sovereign debt of some 170% of its GDP, Lebanon is one of the most indebted countries in the world. In February, shortly before the coronavirus pandemic reached the Middle East, the Lebanese government began talks with the International Monetary Fund to seek loans worth $10 billion to face its debts and, as the IMF claimed, unlock other donors. In March, Lebanon defaulted on at least $1.3 billion worth of Eurobonds that were due. However, the talks with the IMF remain, quote, diagnostic. With thousands of businesses closed and a 35% unemployment rate, nearly half of Lebanon's population lives under the poverty line. Demonstrators continued to shout, "A failed government, faulty and failed MPs and ministers, get out, get out, get out." Many demonstrators argue that the new prime minister has had time to fulfill the promises he made in January and that he hasn't. In fact, they say his latest appointments indicate more business as usual. Last week, Syria also faced anti-government protests in those areas, now all but Idlib, under government control, due to economic hardships. In response, President Bashar al-Assad fired his prime minister. Syria's economy, like Lebanon's, is on the verge of collapse. The currencies for both countries are tied to the U.S. dollar, and both have lost their value. The Syrian government blames the sanctions imposed against the country by the United States and Europe and tries to placate an increasingly impoverished population. The UN has already warned that in 2020, billions of people around the world will suffer famine, made all the worse in war-torn countries like Syria, where more than 11 million people, half of them children, depend on some form of aid to survive. David Beasley, director of the UN World Food Programme.
Before the coronavirus even became an issue, I was saying that 2020 would be facing the worst humanitarian crisis since World War II for a variety of reasons, such as the war in Syria, Yemen, the deepening crisis in places like South Sudan. And as John Eglin, I know, will no doubt set out about Burkina Faso in the central Sahel region. The desert locust swarms in Africa, as the Director General Chu highlighted in his remarks, and more frequent natural disasters and changing weather patterns that we're experiencing. The economic crisis in Lebanon, which is impacting millions of Syrian refugees, DRC, Sudan, Ethiopia, and the list goes on. We're already facing a perfect storm. So today with COVID-19, I want to stress that we're not only facing a global health pandemic, but also a global humanitarian catastrophe.
2 weeks ago, on June 4th, Lebanon reported Israeli warplanes flying through its airspace to carry out new bomb attacks in Syria and denounced these incidents as a threat to peace. The Lebanese foreign minister said those repeated attacks against Lebanese sovereignty are a flagrant violation of international resolutions and a threat to international peace and security. According to the London-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, the airstrikes targeted the Syrian province of Hama and the village of Masayef, where they killed at least 9 people. Masayef is home to Syria's Center for Scientific Research and has suffered previous attacks. The Israeli army has carried out dozens of airstrikes against Syria, arguing that it is acting to prevent Iranians from establishing bases in the country and the transfer of weapons from Tehran to Lebanon's Hezbollah. Reuters reported Israel has acknowledged it has conducted many raids inside Syria since the start of the civil war in 2011, where it views Iranian presence as a strategic threat. Israel has, in the last 2 months, stepped up its strikes on suspected Iranian targets inside Syria. Asked about the missile strike, an Israeli military spokeswoman declined comment. Western intelligence sources said Israel had escalated raids in Syria at a time when the world was distracted by the coronavirus pandemic.
Those reports by Allison Hughes were from Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Spain may be heard at their website rtve.es and by podcast as REE. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. There's a new petition drive to nominate the Cuban doctors and medical brigade working in dozens of COVID hotspots around the world for the Nobel Peace Prize. COVID cases and deaths are soaring in Latin America, with Brazil now the second worst hit country. Guatemalan hospitals are on the brink of collapse. The European Court of Human Rights ruled that France violated the rights of pro-Palestinian activists who were campaigning for a global boycott of Israeli goods. John Bolton's new book accuses Trump of not being strong enough on foreign policy for not attacking Iran and Venezuela. Radio Havana, Cuba.
A new petition drive to nominate the Henry Reeve Medical Contingent for the Nobel Peace Prize has joined the broad international crusade, with the amount of the campaign being taken now to the United States. The launch of the campaign takes place during a virtual conference with the participation of actor and activist Danny Glover and Cuba's ambassador to Washington, Jose Ramon Cabañas. On his Twitter account, Danny Glover confirmed his presence at the event on the Internet. He said that he would be talking to the Cuban ambassador about Cuba and saving lives. More than 2,000 doctors, nurses, and medical professionals from Cuba have collaborated in 27 countries affected by COVID-19. The coordinator of the Brazil chapter of the International Committee for Peace, Justice, and Dignity of Peoples explained that the first thing to do is that the media provide visibility to this proposal for the Nobel Peace Prize, not only medicine, but for Cuba, and to condemn the U.S. blockade against Cuba. The request to grant the Nobel Peace Prize to the international contingent of doctors specialized in disaster situations and serious epidemics, Henry Reeve, acknowledges the work of these brigades over the past 15 years and their current contribution in dozens of countries in the battle against COVID-19. And confirmed coronavirus cases in Latin America have topped 1.5 million. In Brazil, critics of far-right President Jair Bolsonaro's disastrous handling of the COVID-19 pandemic dug 100 graves and placed black crosses in the sand of Rio de Janeiro's Copacabana beach in a tribute to the more than 40,000 Brazilians who have died of the coronavirus. Brazil has now become the epicenter of the pandemic in the global south, with over 802,000 confirmed cases, the world's worst hit country after the United States. In Guatemala, as confirmed coronavirus cases top 8,500 and over 300 people have died, medical staff warn that hospitals in Guatemala are on the brink of collapse. This comes as morgues are also reporting overflowing. Marco Antonio Barrientos, the director of one of Guatemala City's hospitals, spoke to reporters. He said, "The hospitals are reaching their limits. We've definitely reached the peak of this situation. We're overflowing with patients. The medical staff is struggling with everything. They're very tired and they're very exhausted. The situation in Guatemala City is very, very tragic." The European Court of Human Rights has ruled that France violated the rights of 11 pro-Palestinian activists when it convicted them for campaigning against Israeli goods and has ordered the government to pay damages. The criminal conviction against the activists, with the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, had no relevant or sufficient grounds, according to the ruling by the European Court of Human Rights, arguing that their basic right to freedom of expression had been violated. The court ordered France to pay over 101,000 euros, over 115,000 U.S. dollars, in compensation to the activists. The case dates back to the year 2009, when a group of protesters led by French activist Jean-Miguel Palissy staged a demonstration in a supermarket in the eastern French town. The group handed out leaflets calling for various forms of boycott against Israel in response to the treatment of Palestinians and occupation of the Palestinian territories. In its latest ruling, the European Court has now concluded the activists had every right to express their views as long as they did not promote violence, hatred, or intolerance. Former National Security Advisor of the United States, John Bolton, has accused his former boss, U.S. President Donald Trump, of not being strong enough on U.S. foreign policy. Bolton makes the claim in his forthcoming book entitled The Room Where It Happened, A White House Memoir. He said that Trump's decision not to attack Iran in 2019 following the downing of a U.S. drone was the most irrational thing I ever witnessed any president do. John Bolton, who strongly advocated for the U.S. to overthrow the Venezuelan government, claims in his forthcoming book that Trump said that invading Venezuela would be cool and it was really a part of the United States anyway. The Justice Department has filed a lawsuit against Bolton in an attempt to block publication of the book, but copies have already been obtained by the press. Now, Trump is preparing to declare the forthcoming book a danger to national security, attempting to stop its publication.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream worked well this week at their website radiohc.cu, and their download links are fixed and working great. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production costs of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Almost all of the funding this freely distributed program receives is from individual listener donations. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help me keep it going like a listener in Willits, California did this week. We will conclude with Sputnik Radio. On his program called Going Underground, Afshin Ratansi spoke with actress-author Rose McGowan. She discusses what she calls cult-like thinking and leadership that has taken over America, its control of the mass media, the uprising in America, genocide, and the current cultural reset. Sputnik Radio.
We're joined from an undisclosed location by Rose McGowan, one of Time magazine's Persons of the Year and author of the New York Times bestseller, Brave. She's a catalyst for the Me Too movement. Her latest artistic endeavor is the album Planet Nine. Thanks so much for coming back on the show, Rose. So when you came and talked about your book, Brave, talked about being a former member of a cult, you actually think there are some parallels between the United States and a cult?
Oh, I know there are. I was introduced to America at a boarding school, a military school, when I was 10. And what I surmised from a very early age was people telling me how strange it was how I grew up. And to that, I countered, I find it very strange how you live, which to me means you're living in a class structure in an oppressive system that operates exactly like a cult. Specifically with America, we're number one, don't leave here. It's scary out there. The news that is so controlled and shown there that never shows anything around the world other than migrants or people trying to break into the United States and take what we have. You know, it does a huge disservice to the American public, but it also does a huge disservice to the world. And this cult-like way of thinking really needs to be smashed. So what's going on right there in America right now, I'm incredibly proud of.
If you watch any of the stations anywhere in the world, really, they've been covering the mass uprisings. What has it been like for you to watch the violence all around the United States?
Well, I think that's the whole thing with journalism. You just couched it as violence. It's not just violence all over the United States. It's an uprising. It's a we're not going to take this anymore. Because every single time, how many hopes and prayers can actually stop this? None. What's needed is action. What is needed is civil disobedience and civil revolution at the end of the day, because if nobody's listening, if the cult leaders aren't listening, you have to make them listen. And the cult leaders of America could be Trump, it could be Obama, it could be anybody, because it's all the same under that cult-like thought structure. Even with Joe Biden's, how he fights for the black vote or to get the black vote, but doesn't seem to do much in return. He touts his, you know, skills with working across the aisles, Republicans and Democrats working together. Well, I would say and submit, gentlemen, that if you've gotten this far, and this is what we're seeing on the streets today, that this is what the men in power have brought us to and the women that support that cult-like structure, I would say sit down, that you can do better, that you need to do better. And if you can't, you need to move aside because the time is now. We need revolution. We're having a revolution. You know, I see New York Times headlines like, will it all just go back to normal the way it was? And that's not how it works. Not this time. I really fundamentally feel like this one is different. And thank God it's for that. I like that you cannot come up with a better candidate is pretty pathetic. And I think it just shows, you know, the cult-like power structure wanting to hold on to the status quo like nobody's business. You see every day now the American healthcare system being shown for what it is, that it can't bear it, that it was never the best in the world. Same thing with its policies, same thing with spreading its democracy. It's not real democracy. This is not what democracy is. And I don't know if people have forgotten it or maybe they just never knew. but I don't think it's real. And I think, you know, what's going on right now with all of the wonderful people rising up and fighting for it, the Native Americans basically had genocide committed against them and their culture. So the White House could be built off the back of slaves. I mean, if you look at the timeline of it, and then you expect these people to pledge allegiance to the flag. What flag is that? A flag of terror? A flag that triggers them? A flag that gives them PTSD? It has to be better, or I think it will be brought to its knees.
What's it felt like watching Columbus statues either be torn down or vandalized from San Francisco to Houston to Philadelphia?
You know, the thing is, you can't deny on one hand the person did achieve great things, but at such great cost, it negates the great thing. You know, and I think it's okay. And I think it's okay to not celebrate people that hurt others. It's okay to not vote for people that hurt others. It's okay to not care for people that hurt others. And he hurt a lot of people in spreading the myth of white power, essentially.
Do you think Trump will be able to respond to what's happening to preempt any revolution?
Well, I think he's the catalyst for the revolution, so I don't know that there's something to stop it, you know. But the revolution has been a long time in coming. He didn't start all of this. He just tripled down, you know. He didn't start with the kids in the cages, the immigrant kids in the cages. Obama did. Trump just tripled down. You know, I mean, that's how this is going. So I don't know what's going to happen. I do think that there isn't enough sage to burn in the world to cleanse the White House after all the years and years of toxicity and evil that have lived there. I think it's time to start over. The word culture contains the word cult, and that can be on the left and that can be on the right.
Do you see coronavirus, global pandemics, let alone movements like Black Lives Matter, the context of any cultural reset?
It is a cultural reset, but it has been a cultural reset for a long time for a lot of people. It's just, you know, it's almost like when the more mainstream segment of society is like, oh, this is racism. Oh, this is sexism. That was my work and goal and, you know, a term I coined, because that was, you know, not me too. The catalyst for that was a cultural reset. And that's what's going on now. It's like pressing a hand on a big stop button and saying, time out. We're going to do this differently. Otherwise, we're going to perish. We have to be different. We have to be better. You know what? We owe it to the planet, because what else are we doing right now in quarantine? You might as well be better. Get your thoughts in order. Get your spiritual house in order and fight. Fight for others. That's the most important thing.
Rose McGowan, thank you.
That interview was by Avshin Matanse on Sputnik Radio, the current name for The Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. You could use a shortwave radio at home. It's simpler than you might think, except for the interference that your electronic devices will make. If you use the internet, listening globally is even easier and noise-free. See the links at this program's website. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website, along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. This shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.